You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
You are listening to Bridging the Social Distance. My name is Jenny Mitchell, and I recorded this show here at CFRU, Guelph's campus and community radio station, as a means of creating a platform for us to share ideas and feelings and perspectives in the wake of this global pandemic that is COVID-19. I was afraid that people would get isolated or I would lose the opportunity to chat with my community and find out how everyone is doing, so I made this show. If you're listening and you would like to get involved or be interviewed, you can contact me at mobile@cfru.ca. I'd like to provide the disclaimer that these interviews were recorded at different points in time, so situations in some of these locations may have changed. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today I'm speaking with Thirza Armstrong, who lives here in Guelph and hosts The Crow's Nest, a podcast on behalf of the Guelph Tool Library. You can check out their podcast at thecrowsnest.substack.com. This interview was originally recorded on June 4th, 2020. So, to start with, would you like to introduce yourself for listeners?
My name is Thirza Armstrong. Right now, I'm one of the volunteer coordinators at the Guelph Tool Library, and I'm their summer student right now. So, I started a podcast for them called The Crow's Nest over the past 10 weeks. You were the first guest that I recorded and the second episode that I released. So that was really exciting. Yeah, that's me. I don't really do anything else.
So I want to hear what you've been up to during the quarantine, but I would love for you to tell listeners a bit more about your podcast. How would you describe your podcast?
That's a very good question that I'm honestly still kind of figuring out. Originally, the podcast idea was to be sort of reflective of the Tool Library's values of community resilience and resource sharing and sustainability and sort of those sort of like tenets of the sharing economy, I think. And so that's how it started. And we started it now in the hopes of sort of bridging the connection between us and our members that we're not able to have while our doors are closed, because a huge part of, I think, the value of the Tool Library was being able to meet our members and hear about the projects that they were working on when they were coming in to exchange tools. And just everyone had so much insight into different things. And it was just incredible to like sit at the desk and have just so many intelligent people coming up and passionately talking to you about whatever they were doing. And so the idea of the Crow's Nest, I think, was to emulate that as like truthfully as we could. And then, I don't know, like I'm not a very social person naturally. So I don't even like listen to podcasts. So when I started doing this, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't think anyone's going to want to like listen to me. And it's crazy. I really don't know what I'm doing. But I think my goal is to just be like a connector. I love to obtain information. I love to like learn from people and really see what makes people unique, because I think that obviously everybody is different and everyone has something really truly special to bring to the table. And I love to find those things, and then I love to help people share them with others. You know, like I want to meet you, and then I want to help you get wherever you're going. And so that's, I think, my pure goal with the podcast is to help my guests reach new audiences that maybe they would have never been able to sort of easily branch out into. And then I really hope that my listeners leave every episode with like a new insight or a new fact or just, I don't know, something, you know?
I really love several things about that. For one thing, when I picture a tool library or even when I've been in the tool library, I think it's really easy to not really acknowledge the ongoing social piece of a community hub for sharing. It can be really easy to diminish a tool library to its tools and think that it's a place that you pop in, grab a shovel, leave again. And so I really love you highlighting that kind of like thread that everybody shares a desire
to look more towards sharing. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that folks who prioritize a tool library would have in common. And so I think that's really beautiful. I also love your point about how if somebody's listening and then they have like a new thing to consider, or even your guests maybe coming in to share their perspective, but ideally being brought somewhere with their interaction with you. And that seems really in keeping with the tool library, too. You know, if I think of the number of times I went in for a specific tool, but then in doing so was introduced to a tool that opened up a whole new world of possibilities.
Yeah, I think that's really one of the driving factors is really the tool library wants to just bring you wherever you want to go. And so I really that was my biggest fear, I think, that I wouldn't be able to convey that through a podcast, but hopefully.
I mean, I have a lot in common with you in the sense I also don't listen to podcasts. And the funny thing is, though, I think of myself as an incredibly social person, and that's specifically why I've planted myself in projects or situations where I'm going to be surrounded by people. I'm curious to hear how you ended up in your role identifying as not being a social person and yet having that drive in there still.
I've always been very shy and very awkward. That's very much a self-definition. I hear from people all the time, oh my goodness, you're so social, you're so sweet, you're so... And I think it comes from just not being entirely comfortable in my socialness. It's not something that comes naturally. Like I'll be sitting on your side of the podcast right now, listening to someone else talk about their experiences. And it's like, I have to be really actively listening and like paying attention to the fact that I'm listening. Otherwise, like I'm going to be in a completely different dimension. And yeah, so I don't think I have the natural skills that you would assume a podcaster would have to be like someone who loves meeting people. Like I hate meeting new people, if I'm being honest. I love getting to know them, but I really hate, hi, how are you? My name's Thirza. But I think I think that I have enough like passion and a very, maybe an honest energy that I get by without that like natural social etiquette.
That honesty piece I think is huge. I think that's at the core, because I remember I got in not exactly an argument, but an interesting and lively discussion with somebody recently about my own sort of steps to do away with the asking of how are you and not actually meaning really anything other than a casual greeting in that. And I said that, you know, wherever possible, if somebody says how are you, I do take a moment to consider how I'm actually doing. And while I don't spring on them a heavy, loaded, intense reality, if that's how I'm feeling, I'm also not ever going to say okay or good if I don't mean it. And yeah. It was sort of an attempt to reclaim the fact that I like to think every interaction is an opportunity for us to be honest a little bit, you know, like a kind version of honesty, but an honesty. And so I think like, that, to me, is more important at the core of the types of conversations you're setting out to have than being very good at the niceties.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I also feel like, I don't know if you feel this, but I think there's a fear, this sort of exhilaration when I was trying to describe to somebody when I'm interviewing somebody and they're actually like a total stranger to me, the moments leading up to the interview, I'm like actually kind of petrified, because I picture like this scenario where I just have nothing, or we're partway through. Yeah, like you described, I check out and then they say something very important. I have to admit I lost all of it. And then the fact is it never happens. But I think the fear keeps me on my toes in a way that makes me very present. And I don't want to say I could hear the fear in your interviews, because that's not true. But I could hear the presence that maybe was coming out of that feeling.
Oh, definitely. And I think the recording process for me is like almost traumatic. Like I really have to psych myself up for it. Like the meeting of someone, especially over Zoom, like it's so not my like natural, I don't think it's anyone's natural. I think everybody's really having struggles trying to maintain all of our social interactions through a computer. But in particular, like, the the recording and then the editing of my voice, it's just like, it was so crazy. And then all, like, I would sit and record the same thing over and over and over again and just be like, okay, no, this is going to be totally it. This is going to be the one. And then I would listen to it like 3 times as I was editing it. And I would be like, I hate it. Like, I hate it. I sound so awful. And so I would just delete the entire thing and start over because I would be convinced that I could get it right. But it's just, yeah. And so I think that fear definitely came out. I had a friend review like my first episode before I sent it out. And she said, it sounds like you're whispering. Like, it sounds like you're telling secrets because you're scared. And I was like, I am whispering because I'm scared. I don't want anyone to hear me.
I got accused of the very same thing early on. My narrating bits are much smaller than yours. Like, you have a sort of opening, kind of like a little mini monologue leading up to your guest. And I think that that's very incredible and very honorable. Yeah. I struggle with even the tiniest intro. I'm also guilty of re-recording. And I feel like, yeah, I got accused literally of whispering for those pieces. I think I was just like right up close. I didn't want anyone in my household to potentially overhear me saying things as me to no one.
Yeah, it's so nerve-wracking. And for some reason, being like alone with a pair of headphones on while you're doing it makes it so much worse. Mm. Like the room knows that it's empty and you're talking to no one.
Yeah, that's very real. I want to know more about your editing. You're relatively new. You are 4 episodes in terms of having them come out. Maybe yes. You are more interviews or recordings deep. I have been doing this for several years now. So, you know, I feel like my processes are going to look very different than yours because of mm-hmm. that, right? So I want to know, like, what your process is. How do you determine what to keep and what to cut? Or have you already started, like, coming up with some systems for these things?
So I've started coming up with some systems, but they are all very rudimentary and, like, just created in a moment of panic. Maybe this will help. So I'll record my episode and I give my guests a couple questions in advance so that I find a lot of regular people get very scared when you ask them about themselves. Everyone just assumes that they would have nothing to talk about. And so I'll say, hey, I would love to interview you. And they're like, why? Why would you want to do that? And so I have to like give them, okay, here's the kinds of things I'm interested in hearing from you. And through that process, I think I get sort of like a theme of the episode of what I would like to really focus on. Mm. And then I'll record the episode and then I'll edit it. And I just listen through it once, just deleting like ums and ahs and awkward bits. And then in that I get like my second listening where I'm actually like intaking all the information that I heard that I couldn't really fully process because I was busy trying to be a good host. And that I get more of like a feel of the things that we were talking about. And then honestly, I leave it for like 2 days. I don't come back to it for a little while. And I really stew on what I got out of the conversation. And then that's sort of where I bring in my like intro and my outro sort of talk of like, so like, here's the things I went into wanting to learn about almost. And then here's the things that I learned. And I hope that you can learn something similar. So that's like my I guess like spiritual editing part, but like for the actual editing, I go on Audacity and I try my best. And that's about it.
I love that. That all sounds like a really logical and amazing route to take.
Yeah.
I think people don't realize with this type of podcast, when you're doing it alone, you have to wear all of the hats. And mm-hmm. it is, as you mentioned, it's very challenging to be a present host and an active listener. Like the listening piece is like what your producer would be really like leaning into, right? And mm-hmm. In fact, for the CBC, for example, like music shows like, Q is one that I have a little bit of a glimpse into the process. There would be producers who call ahead and ask like all kinds of questions so that they can narrow down only the most interesting answers. And then they give just the questions that lead to the interesting answers to the host. So by the time the host shows up, all they have to do is ask questions that already have interesting answers. And then they don't even have to edit it after. Someone else does that. And it just blows my mind. And I mean, of course, it's going to sound like slick and intriguing. But I really love the community radio style approach like you take, when there's a real human being that is, you know, not necessarily going to lean into every one of those responsibilities with the same enthusiasm, but takes them on nonetheless and becomes like a little expert. Yeah. Because you have to.
Yeah, you really do.
I want to know how you pick your guests. So for listeners, when I'm interviewing you, there's been 4 different episodes. Maybe you can talk about the 4 different sort of topics you covered in those ones, and maybe there are others you've covered since. But I would love to know about who you've interviewed so far and how that came to be.
Yeah. So I actually have very long-term plans for my interviewee system. I would like to have, I guess, multiple different, like, themed episodes. Like my background, when I was in university, I was in school for landscape architecture. And although I'm not a landscape architect anymore, and I don't ever plan to be, there were a lot of really interesting people that I met in landscape architecture. And so like I wanted to do like an entire series on what is landscape architecture and that sort of thing, because that's something that I know that I can talk about. And I know a lot of people that would be interested in talking about it. So like in that, I kind of thought about all of the things that I knew I had the ability to be interesting about. And I made like a huge list of just like everybody that I personally could think of that I knew. And then the tool library also, because this isn't just me that is running the crow's nest. I'm sort of like the project manager, I guess, but it is through the tool library. And so I also got an entire list from all of the steering committee there on interesting people who have been involved directly with the tool library that we could talk to. And then, so my first episode, I decided to release Steph Clark, who is another one of the coordinators at the tool library. And I plan to release an episode introducing each one of the steering members, so that you can really get to know the people behind the tool library, because we're just such a very odd, interesting ragtag group of just very passionate community members who all really, really want to do this one thing. And so we have so many different areas that we're pulling from. So I started with Steph so that we could introduce the tool library and start that series of steering committee members. And then the second one was you, Jenny. And I really wanted to have you as one of my first guests, actually, just because you have already, well, you are a podcaster, so that made it a lot easier for me to figure out what I was doing, to have a guest who I knew would be like a really productive guest and like pull their weight. And also I know that we had a lot of things in common. We both have our buses and I'm sure other things, but I knew it would be interesting. And then my next guest, I had Press for Time Paninis, which my hope there was to show the way businesses are supporting the community during COVID. And I think Press for Time has such an amazing community response and just a relationship with their customers that I really wanted to showcase that. And then for my fourth episode, that one was actually very special because that one was completely unplanned. I was actually going to be releasing a different episode that week, but then everything was happening on the farm and I had some neighbors and many friends who were involved in the situation there. And they were just having trouble really getting their message out there. And so I was like, okay, well, I can help with this. So please come on the podcast and let's talk about everything that you've been going through. And I really want to help you get the support from the community that you need. And I think it went really well. That was my most popular episode by far. I got like 5 times the listeners that I have on my other ones. And I can't speak to what's going on at the farm right now, but there are some changes, I think, that have been coming out of the situation. And so it was really nice to know that I had helped make a difference there. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. Yeah, it's just, it kind of feels like you could talk to everyone. And when you can talk to everyone, how do you choose? Like, where mm-hmm. do you prioritize? How do you plan, you know? And so, yeah, it sounds like a kind of like a, I mean, both that there's folks more than yourself supplying suggestions, which seems like a really good move when you are representing a broader organization. And then also the fact that you listen and then reflect on what you learned, and then that ties back into your intro, I think is really a neat, like, it's almost like you couldn't have a wrong guest if you're putting that time and effort into learning from what everyone has to share. So in that way, maybe there's less concern that you would pick wrong, you know?
Yeah. Even in, I've recorded, I think, 7 episodes so far. Some of them just aren't the right time to release with how quickly things are changing. The experience so far of interviewing each person has been so different that I definitely don't think that there can be a wrong guest. Like I said, like, I think that most of the people I am interviewing are from this sort of sharing economy type community anyways. So we already are going to have things in common that I know that I can, you know, pick up on. But it's definitely difficult. There've been a couple guests where I don't think we like meshed as well. There wasn't that like inherent connection. So it can be very hard, but I think that everybody has something to bring to the table, and there's no possible way for me to have enough experience to not learn from somebody new.
Yeah. I think the other kind of important factor in there, I think if you're open about the fact that you're coming to the table to learn and not as somebody already like prior super educated into what that person does, I think that I like to think there was actually, I went to a radio conference once and there was a workshop on the topic of, I think she called it interculturality. She was saying how in her particular radio show, she comes to the table from one culture, interviews someone from another one, but it's like the thing that's created when they get together in that conversation that is where the intersection exists. And that is kind of was the basis of her show. So she could never be an expert or have lived experience as that person, nor could they with her. But admitting that and coming to the table as equals in your not knowing creates this beautiful new thing, which is that conversation, right? And I think that seems to be key to your approach, you know?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, I think it's so easy, and I'm absolutely guilty of this as well, of just really, I don't know, just like standing almost too firm to your own self and identity, and only, I guess, viewing the world through that one specific lens. And I think that's a huge injustice for the people that you're interpreting, and also for yourself, because there's no opportunity for learning or growth there. And so, like, this entire experience, if I'm being completely honest, like, has been really uncomfortable in a lot of ways. Like, when I was first getting ready to release my first few episodes, like, I spent the entire week like crying because I was so just like unsure of myself and outside of my comfort zone. And I think that's honestly, like, it's almost a good thing, because I have to really make an effort to meet everyone halfway.
Well, I keep feeling just so inclined to reassure you based on, like, just having some of these things in common. Like, when I came up with the idea for my COVID radio show, this new podcast, it was a totally different approach than the mobile studio. The mobile studio has, I don't know, in a sense, nothing but time. I can show up to a space and I'm going to progress at the speed and with this sort of forward motion that is suitable. Like, I'm going to build relationships and we're going to progress from there. And it has to be sort of organic and patient. Whereas to do a radio show about how we're coping during COVID struck me as incredibly time sensitive. And you already mentioned that you've tabled a few episodes. And I get it. Like, my instinct was to wait. I recorded some and I was going to take more time to consider, like, how do I put this out? What's the most tasteful way to introduce this? Am I going to be sharing content that upsets people or reminds them of things they don't want to think about? And then I ultimately just had to be like, no, I'm releasing this tomorrow. Yeah. Because it has to come out, because it's going to make less and less sense the more days that go by. And the interesting thing about the time that we're making podcasts in is we have no idea what's going to change even a day later. So I do, like, I have the practice of announcing when the interview took place and putting sort of a little disclaimer right in the intro that some of the situations may have changed already even. But that still really can't prepare for the unknowns.
I mean, my experience right now is that, honestly, I I just last week recorded an episode with Bonnie Dirtnall from Laboring All of Our Lives. She's a local historian who focuses on the labor practices and just like striking and protesting patterns of Guelph, specifically like 1800s into like World War One. And so that was like really interesting because I'm a big history buff and I love local history in particular, and I'm very passionate about workers' rights. So talking specifically about like the conditions in Guelph factories and foundries and stuff was really great. And then a few days later, the protest broke out in Minneapolis, and suddenly it was like, well, this isn't really the important story to tell anymore. And now with that episode, it's kind of been like, I was really excited to release that and I'm still going to, but now I'm completely rewriting what I've learned from it, almost like taking new parts of the audio and that I wasn't originally going to include to make it more of a history of the people's rights in Guelph and our protesting and our right to protest. But it was like a big moment of like, oh, like I just did this. And not only is it sort of, it's like, it's not appropriate to release anymore. Like as someone with a platform, I have an obligation to talk about what's happening right now, but it's like, I don't have any of the material to be able to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been an interesting balance.
Yeah, I completely understand. I feel like what I've tried to keep framed in my mind is the ultimate importance for me is that we have an archive of these times. And so while I'm also sharing this content, you know, almost in real time, ultimately, even if something had to be held onto for exactly the reason you're describing, it's still really valuable that you captured it when you did. And the fact that that conversation may have looked entirely different if it had been after the circumstances in the States, you know, I would say that, yes, you could have that conversation again and it would look very different. But what you captured days before is very valid and real as well.
That's a good point. I honestly didn't even consider.
Yeah, this whole process of picking guests, it's like if you catch them on a day that they are no longer sad or a day where they suddenly have received a benefit check that they didn't know they were going to get, the conversations even an hour apart can be dramatically changed.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I think we've only kind of been talking about podcasting and the tool library, but even then, like, yeah, like personally, like things change so quickly. So like even we had to reschedule this interview because my partner is tree planting in BC right now, and he's been gone for about 3 weeks, and I just got a phone call from him today that he's gonna have to come home early. So all of a sudden it was like I had like a month to prepare for him to get here, and then now he's gonna be here in like 2 days.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's been really crazy.
Well, I did want to ask you like what changes have transpired during this time. So it's interesting that you shared a pretty dramatic one that was even just from today. But yeah, even over the course of when you started the, let's say, the interviewing process through to now, what are some of the things that have changed for you in terms of like your disposition or your lifestyle? Or have there been any like real twists and turns? Because it's interesting to think of how that may shift your role as the host going through the series as well.
Yeah, actually it has. So since I knew that I was going to be spending a certain amount of time by myself, since my partner and I kind of live together, I came into this sort of May, June, July section of the year as like, okay, this is going to be my time for personal growth. Like this is going to be all me. And then COVID hit and then everything else hit. And it's been like a crazy snowball. And I've just sort of still been holding on to that like hope that, okay, like I'm really going to get the time to sit down with myself and like have a real conversation and make sure that I'm still on the path that I want to be on. And I'm getting there in the way that fits best for me. And I have been able to do that, definitely, but it's taken such a direction that I would never have expected that I learned a lot more about like boundaries and just advocating for myself. Like at the beginning of this situation, Bray making sure that I was, you know, they were going to be proud of this project and that I was doing it right. And I was really like kind of overworking myself with that fear. And now by the end of it, it's like, what you get is what you're going to get. It's in the middle of a pandemic, and I'm trying my best. So hopefully you enjoy it. But if you don't, I'm really sorry. But this is all I can do. And that's kind of been kind of freeing. And mm-hmm. I feel a lot less nervous about my episodes as I've been going on. And I feel a lot more confident, I think, leading the conversations. I think at the beginning, I didn't want to step onto my guests' toes. I didn't want to like make them feel like they were just kind of being blindly led around a conversation that they had no say in. And I really wanted it to be like an equal contribution. But then I found that most of my guests have even less podcast experience than I do. And so they were like too lost to be able to do that. So I really had to like step up and I'm still figuring out how to step up, but to take the reins on those and be like, okay, well, I'm not the expert on our conversation, but I am the expert on this podcast. So
you're listening to Bridging the Social Distance, a show recorded here in Guelph at CFRU as a platform for sharing stories and perspectives during the global pandemic of COVID-19. This show is also being syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario. Today, I'm speaking with Thirza Armstrong, who hosts the podcast The Crow's Nest on behalf of the Guelph Tool Library.
Yeah, you again brought up some really important points. My job at the radio station as the mobile studio coordinator is really born out of how motivated and driven we were to make sure that we were getting more voices on the airwaves, and not just more, but different. And so recognizing what stands in the way of folks opening up or sharing or participating in radio making. And part of that is people just truly not thinking they have anything of value to say. And it's an undeniable role to come and constantly kind of re-advocate and reassure people that they do, that what I want is their story, not a story, you know, not like, and I think like that meant there was a lot more of my voice in it than I thought mm-hmm. there would be. And I struggled with that. I was like, you don't need more of my voice in the airwaves. This whole point of this is to get everyone else's voices. But I actually don't think it's super fair to a guest to not share a bit of yourself in that engagement. Like, you're telling them that they have a story, but then you're not even willing to share your own within that. I think that like it kind of has to be that give and take.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's something I'm struggling with right now, because I don't want to be known. I get very nervous. The idea like that terrifying ordeal of being known, you know, like I feel that whenever and even I will be listening to my episodes and I'll be like, I'm not talking at all. Like, I haven't spoken at all yet. I haven't said anything about myself. And that means like, it's not as interesting. You know, there isn't that conversation. I can hear that it's too one-sided. And that's actually where my like intro style started, was that I was listening to, I actually think it was our episode. And I think I was like, I'm not talking enough in this. And
it's just because you were interviewing me, though, and I talk all the time. I finally get to talk.
I was so nervous. but yeah, I was just like, okay, well, I need to say something. You know, there's not enough material here to even work with. And so that's how I started it. But yeah, there's even like, I'll be in the interview, you know, asking the questions, and there'll be that telltale lull in the conversation where they've reached the end of that thought, and it's your turn to kind of guide them a little bit further. And I just kind of like shy away from it. I'm like, no, I can't talk about myself in this. I have a story I could relate, and I can't even say it. So I really have to work on that to be able to want to be as open as I want my guests to be.
Yeah, I think it's a balance. I remember somebody telling me that they were learning so much about me from listening to my show. And yeah, the instinct was to be kind of like, oh, dang, like I'm not doing my job. Mm-hmm. I'm like inserting myself. But I think that they meant it in a nice way. They meant that like over the course of many episodes, little pieces of me emerged that they're kind of like different parts of you that could only be seen in response to the person you're talking to. So mm-hmm. I think like to reassure you, if you're a person that doesn't want to be known, which is hilarious to me, but if you don't want to be, I think the thing that's important to remember is the fact that you're going to keep changing.
Oh yeah.
Right? So like they'll get to know you that day, But even just a few interviews later, you're a different person. So if you don't want to keep that person, that listener in your life to get to know you on deeper levels, you don't have to. They're just going to be hearing the bits that you share. And then you're obviously going to be like much more multifaceted than that as well.
Oh, that's such an excellent point. Yeah. Logically, I know that like sharing one single tidbit about myself doesn't mean that they're like, oh, like we must know everything about you. But it's just because like I know that tidbit and I know how it relates to all the other tidbits. And though I feel like so incredibly seen whenever I mention anything about myself, but that has to, like, you have to as a host, because that's really 50% of the reason people are listening is the things that you have to say and the things that maybe even not what you're directly saying, but how you're guiding the conversation, how you're editing and producing your episodes. So yeah, it's been something I've been conscious of, because I feel like it's unfair to an audience to not be able to get to know their host.
Yeah, or at least have a window into them.
Yeah,
you know,
they should have the option.
Yeah, I think, honestly, taking it even outside of the role of being hosts, I think it's just like a generous and nice practice in general to approach like life with the openness of folks getting to know you a bit, like just by you existing.
Mm-hmm.
When I leave my house and go out in the world, it's maybe a little different in the time of a quarantine, or probably a lot different, but I feel like as soon as I leave my house, or even if I'm ever posting online or anything that has like an engagement on any sort, even if it's a big blurry unknown one of I don't know who I'm going to encounter or who's going to notice or what, I still leave the house with this sort of like openness to the idea of whatever I do that day potentially having an impact in some way that I may never get to know the depth of or the significance of, good or bad. And just being open to that rather than assuming that the world is mine to be in and have all of the control over what that means. I think it goes back to your core principles at the tool library of sharing. I think that like looking at what you need and what you take and then what you make from the thing that you take shouldn't be just a one insular selfish project. You should be thinking of your contribution somewhere else as the give in that scenario. And it sort of doesn't have to be all in the same moment. But I think that ebb and flow is really important. And I think on the radio or on the podcast that comes out spoken. But I think that we're kind of like doing that anyway. And so, yeah, I mean, I can understand why you'd be nervous about the idea of a world that's observing you or getting to know you without your direct consent. But I think it is almost inevitable and maybe something that when leaned into thoughtfully is a good thing.
Yeah, that is an excellent point. And you're very right. And I think it's just because like the podcast is so intentional. Like it takes all of those themes of being open and being known and being honest and stuff. And it makes them like as focused as possible. And so like you are 100% aware of every interaction that you are, every like micro interaction that you have, every like flick of the eyebrow or cough or whatever, you know, like how does that person think of it? And maybe that's just me, but yeah, it's kind of just, when you think about it, it's just the same as the rest of life too.
Yeah, I constantly struggle with the balance of how much sort of self-awareness or awareness in general is healthy. I think as an editor, it's incredibly useful to be hyper-observant and like hearing things through the most exaggerated possible listeners' ears, you know? So like,
yeah,
if that sound sounds annoying to you, the repeated, you know, little whistle in the person's voice or something, or a small cough that's ongoing, it doesn't hurt anything to be mindful of that and reduce that in the editing, right? But you're probably hearing it more than anyone else would, you know? Probably.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I don't know. I think we can be so hard on ourselves with how much we think about things.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of your favorite things that you have learned from doing your podcast that you maybe even that you didn't expect?
Oh, that's a very good question. I've learned a lot of like concrete fact type things. Like I have an episode that will be coming out with Brandon Kidd from Idea Exchange, which is the like Cambridge libraries.
Oh, and, I love those places.
It's really cool. I actually didn't know anything about it, surprisingly. So I got to learn about what Idea in Exchange is and how it's different from a library. And then I also learned about bibliotherapy and what those like types of things can be, and these like new potential social structures in libraries that they're trying to introduce as they try and stay updated against like ebooks and that sort of thing. So that things like that is really cool. But I think also, I think from every guest, I kind of learn a little bit about myself as I see myself reflected in each guest and just like the difference in each interaction. And I think most people have the assumption that they're so stagnant and so like consistent. And it's so obvious listening to myself and having to really analyze myself as I'm listening and the way that I interact with each individual person and how it becomes so personalized to that person's interactions. So that has been really interesting to see so plainly that maybe I can be a little bit of a social chameleon and try and just like, you know, be what anyone else wants me to be. So that was really interesting as like an emotional knowledge that I learned.
Yeah, the social chameleon thing is another interesting one. Like, do you ever feel like you learned so much or shift so much that you actually have no idea what your own character is anymore?
Yeah, absolutely. Like with guests that are more vibrant, like I can feel myself take more of like a backseat role. I would really love to listen to, you know, you talk. And then with guests that are more visibly nervous, like I get much more outgoing and much more like I'm trying to make them as comfortable as possible and like cracking jokes and stuff and that sort of thing. And so it's really cool to be like, oh, okay, I can do these things. Like I can talk to anybody. It's totally fine.
Yeah. I often feel like if somebody listened to everything, they would eventually start to think I was making up at least some of the enthusiasm when I'm really not, but like I'm constantly blown away by what I can get like interested in that I had no idea anything about moments before. Mm-hmm. But some people I think really just actually have that type of curiosity. I see that in you for sure in a big way. Like I don't think it's completely separate actually from, it's like a form of hoarding. It's like
I think so.
Story hoarding or like experience hoarding or something. It's like you see a thing in it that suddenly is so inspiring and so intriguing and you just want the opportunity to have that in your space and to get to know about it and explore it. And sometimes it's things, sometimes it's people and interactions, but
yeah, I really love like new information. It's almost like the entire world is a puzzle and like every piece, like I know it's going to fit somewhere. And so I'm just like always so excited. And then like, okay, what pieces do you fit into even? Like what knowledge is close to this? How can I connect these things, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's definitely where my excitement comes from is my need to know everything.
Okay, I have to ask a question because I have the exact same puzzle analogy in my brain. And I've even said during the quarantine that it feels as though there is actually an amount of interviews I could do where I would have all the answers to like tell me what to do on the other side. And it's like feels like that. But this is the first time that I have felt the puzzle as a thing that actually could be completed. And I wonder with your puzzle imagery, is it a puzzle that ever expands with no frame? Or is it a puzzle that over the course of your life would be completed?
I don't think it could be completed. Like when I picture it in my head, it looks so chaotic. Like none of the pieces actually match any of the pieces that are next to them. There's entire sections that are completely empty. There's like maybe a part that just shoots way over in that direction for no reason and there's nothing else over there. And I just kind of wander around with a single piece at a time being like, where might you fit?
Do the empty bits give you anxiety?
I don't think so. I don't think I could ever complete the puzzle even if I wanted to. And I don't think that the puzzle is even of only this lifetime. Mm. You know, like this is, we've got, depending on your belief system, which mine, I am a big proponent of reincarnation. And so for me, like this puzzle is very old and it's going to be, maybe it'll be complete eventually. I don't actually know what it'll look like, but if I don't get there's no concern about how many pieces that I'll put on it, because someone else, the next version of me, will get whatever pieces I miss.
Yeah. Well, I think even if someone was listening and didn't believe in reincarnation, the concept of a continuation of you being neither the beginning nor end of a term of learning is one that's healthy to consider, right? We shouldn't really do anything during our lives that suggests that when we're gone, they have no purpose or no impact, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Even my, like in Sims, which, because I know you love Sims, when you choose their lifetime goal, and it's like, I always thought the idea of that was so cool, and I never really considered it before Sims, that like you have your daily goals and you're like the things that you're trying to do in the short term, and then you have something for like your entire life that you're trying to complete. And I never, they actually terrified me in Sims. Like, I wouldn't work towards them at all. Like, I wasn't, you're not going to get like your $1 million or your like family lineage, because that's too long-term and terrifying. But now that I've sort of settled into that more, I think that most people, the best and the healthiest and the most rewarding lifetime goals are the ones that can't even be completed.
Mm-hmm. It's a careful balance. I think it's amazing to hear you describe it, because it's like to set goals or imagine things down the road to drive you and give you a purpose in the decisions you make, while also being ready to do away with it or not see it come to fruition. Like, it's almost like, I don't know, at least personally, I can't let myself think about it not happening. I have to sort of live in the fact that it will, but also change my mind about things all the time, and I'm perfectly fine with that. And so it's like, I'm on a deep level, I'm aware that my plans will change, but I kind of have to act like they won't to keep going to that thing.
Yeah, it's a very interesting dichotomy, I think, of being able to be like very go with the flow, and whatever's happening, I'm okay with, because, you know, you're never in control anyways. And then also the idea of there is like a long-term goal that has a very clear boundary and definition that I hope that I'll be able to complete one day. And it's funny for me, at least, because I sort of, like, that goal is always in my head. I'm always thinking about the end goal, and every small decision that I make in my daily life, my goal is to have that add to, you know, the long-term goal. And then, but for to have that, to have it and be so clear, it used to be really scary for me, because it was so fragile. You know, anything could take it away, this smallest change, and it wouldn't be possible anymore. And so my new system is just like this, like, constantly revolving, chaotic future that, like, I don't even know how it works. Like, every new bit of information that I come across, or thing I learn, or insight, or whatever, like, it all, it's almost like it shifts, like, these giant weird cogs, and like retunes the future, you know, every decision. Yeah. It kind of just like, oh, okay, there's the new version. And in that, I've found a lot of joy, because it's just constantly revolving, and it's constantly updating, and it's still there, and it's always been there, and it's been the same sort of core value belief that I just want. Well, like, it's literally, I just want like a farm somewhere deep in the northern Ontario, and just to never be seen again, and to have it like be some sort of cool nonprofit that helps people with food or something. But the way it's sort of snowballed and become this like formed thing with no boundaries is very cool. I don't know how we got to that, but
but so much of that resonates with me, and one that I've added in that I think really had to come later, like when I'd lived more life, was the idea that I can think of something as the future without defining when the future is.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had all kinds of things that I've achieved, but they've been on completely different timelines. And so there's, I think, like a patience that you get to have eventually if you're doing things right, or if you like are kind to yourself. And so, yeah, if you didn't set a hard date, And, you know, really, like, why does that have to be part of the personal narrative? Why did you have to set a date? You can have a future goal without saying it starts on this day and then having to look that day in the eyes and have failed it. And I've had those moments when I was younger, but I think, like, I'm mainly void of those now for the big things. I love not knowing when that part of the future will come into effect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I'm sort of transitioning into that sort of headspace of there is no timeline. And for me, the biggest barrier for that was actually still being in school and having those artificial deadlines so constantly laid out for me that I had no control over. And it was like, okay, you're in school for this many years and then you do your undergrad for this many years. And it was like, my life was so neatly structured and like packaged up in a little bow. And this is, you know, these are your formative years and this is, you know, your next step and whatever. And while I was in school, having that like very clear deadline of here is when you're going to be graduating and this step of your life is over and then welcome to the world, that was really terrifying. But then once I realized that the world isn't like that, it's really just like time isn't real. School gave you like your 8-hour days and your 10-month year and your 12 months and 4 months and then a 2-year master's degree and then whatever, but time's not real. It's not real at all.
I actually have heard similar observations in reference to the quarantine, right? That some of what people have actually done better within is that their schedules are getting more in tune with what feels right for them on any given day and less in direct response to what the world has told them should be their start to the day, should be their most productive hours, should be how much they accomplish within this block. I think like there's like sort of a forgiveness that you have to have during quarantine that I think is actually helping people reframe the benefit of forgiving ourselves outside of a quarantine too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and school's not forgiving in that sense.
No, school is so unforgiving. And I was with student accessibility, so I even got extra deadlines, and they didn't matter to me as much as maybe your regular student. And even then, like, I found it so claustrophobic and so limiting that, you know, if you want to do this, like, here's how many steps that you have to take to get here. And you're not allowed to learn about these things until fourth year because you're not smart enough yet. And all of these things. And it's like, what do you mean I have to wait a year to learn something I'm interested in learning right now? Like, that's so crazy to me that I would ever have to, you know, I don't know what's going to be happening in a year. To think that I could even afford to wait is such a crazy thought, especially because there's no reason for it. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of the university system now that I've left it and can sort of look back and see how the system operates. I'm not a big fan of it.
That's fair. I think that's part of growing up is figuring out what you're not a fan of and figuring out how to get it out of your life, I think. So I want to ask you a few things that I've asked everybody. One is a question around support. So what you think support could look like right now? And I guess for you or folks in your life or folks you've talked to, if there's been like a theme emerging for you around like folks not being supported and something that we could be doing that would be very helpful.
Yeah. When listening to that question, what I think of honestly is like my mom. And my mom right now is in Kitchener and I am the baby of the family. And so all of the birds have left the nest. And so my mom was in school and it got canceled with COVID. And she worked at she was in school for recreational management stuff for senior homes at Conestoga. And so what are those called? Co-op was like at a senior home and her job was at like a recreation center. And so because of COVID, all of those got canceled. And my stepdad is a truck driver. And so he's been basically sanctioned to his truck since February. And so I think in that time, like my parents have seen each other twice and my stepdad has spent the rest of the time, like 100% of it in his truck, quarantined there as he's driving around the States. And I guess, like, there's so many supports out there, especially with COVID. People are really trying to, you know, create spaces for people to reach, to stay supported. And the problem with that comes in where I think a lot of those supports only work for people who are already feeling up to being supported, you know? And so for people like my mom who are stuck and have been stuck by themselves this entire time, who maybe don't know how to reach those supports, there's no more spaces for them to just sort of run into them by chance. You know, there's no meeting a classmate who can take you out for lunch when you're feeling bad. There's no making movie plans or anything else. All of our actions have to be so intentional right now. And for those who can't reach the supports that are already there, like there's almost no options for them to just, yeah, to be able to get out of it themselves, which I really feel for. You know, you see there's so many stories coming out right now of people who are in complete isolation and like how they struggle. And I think of like my neighbors who are older, who maybe don't have internet and don't have email. And it's like, they don't have Netflix party or Facebook groups and all of these chats to be able to reach their loved ones. And I don't know how to meet them halfway when they aren't able to meet me, you know, and I'm no longer able to bridge the rest of that gap.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is, but yeah.
That one is a hard one. That one's a really hard one to answer because that one was already a difficult one to answer even before COVID. You know, there were always those people who really need help, who we aren't able to reach, and it's just made that gap so much wider.
Well, to take it in a very different direction, my other question that I've been asking everybody is one around silver linings. So while not diminishing the severity and the trauma of a global pandemic and circumstances just like you described, I'm sure you're also seeing things emerge that give you a lot of like hope or help frame kind of what you would like to make valuable or important or cling to if we get to return to something like a version of normal. So what is something you've seen emerge during this time that you would really love to see continued?
I see people putting themselves first in ways that I have not seen in a while. And I mean that not in an individual sense, but like everyone's going through it and everyone knows that they're going through it in a way that allows for a lot of gentleness, where we're all like, okay, it's a pandemic. Like there's nothing I can do. You know, this really isn't my fault. And so I'm seeing like in myself and in my roommates and friends and family, people who are advocating for their needs. You know, like this is what I need. Everything sucks right now and I'm sorry I won't be coming to this meeting. Or, you know, maybe it's 10 a.m. but I'm gonna go make dinner, you know, or whatever. Like nothing matters. I really love seeing people take themselves seriously and their needs seriously, and putting that before just like that societal regulation of this is when you do things. It's like, well, no, like when do you do things? Like tell us, because you're the only one who knows.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like making yourself at least a lead character in your own story.
Yeah.
Some people never do. Same people who think they don't have a story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, that and seeing kids outside again, because I was like, I can say like I was one of the last generations in like 2004, 2005, where like kids were outside all the time. Like I spent my whole summers outside. And then just after I graduated like elementary school, that really sort of started to taper off. And now kids are like back out and taking over the streets again. And it's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, for people listening, can you remind listeners the name of your podcast and where to find it?
Yeah. So it's called The Crow's Nest. You can find it at thecrowsnest.substack.com. You can also find it on all of the Tool Library social media, on our website, and you can Google me. And we are on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well, so you can search up The Crow's Nest there, or you might be able to find it if you search my name, Thirza Armstrong.
Awesome. How do you spell Thirza?
Thirza. I learned how to spell it correctly for the first time when I was like 8.
Yeah, fair enough. That's amazing. Well, I should wrap it there, but thank you so much for taking the time today. This was super fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed being on the other side of the podcast.
Yeah, well, good luck with your continued work in the podcasting field.
Thank you so much.
So once again, that was Thirza Armstrong, host of The Crow's Nest. The Crow's Nest is a podcast put together for the Guelph Tool Library, and you can check it out at thecrowsnest.substack.com. That brings us to the end of this episode of Bridging the Social Distance, a show produced at CFRU in Guelph and syndicated for CIOI in Hamilton, Ontario, that aims to create a platform for us sharing what we are doing to get through this time together in the wake of COVID-19.